my privilege once again to be able to stand before you to teach the lesson this morning. Certainly thankful for everyone's presence. We're going to be looking at Luke chapter 22. And various verses there. We're going to focus on verses 35 through 38. Reduce some of my the content of what I'd like to teach, but that's always the case. There's never seemingly enough time to cover a subject as well as one would like to. But we're going to look at an idea that is found there that is somewhat controversial, somewhat of a difficult subject as far as the scriptures go in understanding it. I may not teach exactly a whole conclusion or a total conclusion of what you might want, but I think we can eliminate what the Bible doesn't teach here. Now, this is a subject that someone had asked me to speak on, not here, but another place, and we'll, as you read the verses here, as we read them together, I'll explain why this is a controversial verse and how we can look at it in light of Jesus' teaching. In Luke 22, beginning with verse 35, which is found on page 1214, I'll read. Luke 22:35, and he said to them, "When I sent you without money bag, knapsack, and sandals, did you lack anything?" So they said, "Nothing." Then he said to them, "But now, he who has a money bag, let him take it, and likewise a knapsack, and he who has no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. For I say to you that this which is written must still be accomplished in me. And he was numbered with the transgressors, for the end, the things concerning me have an end." So they said, "Lord, look here, are two swords." And he said to them, "It is enough." Now, this title could be something else. It could be about Jesus. It could be the idea of pacifism and warfare, the idea of Christians having weapons today, and what the Bible teaches about guns. And this is one of the issues that was involved in the discussion I had with someone who asked me about this verse. Now, this is somewhat difficult verse. It is somewhat obscure. And if you look at scholars, what they have to say about it, they go in several directions. But as I said, I may not conclude what you believe is the clearest way to understand this, or a conclusion that you feel is full, because I'm going to leave some of this for you to study yourself. And so the title is, "It Is Enough," understanding what Jesus meant by that statement. If we understand what that statement is, then I think we can understand what he meant concerning this. Now, on the backside, what this person was wanting was, of course, to answer the question about Christians today, was Jesus teaching that you can arm yourself, that you can carry a weapon and for self-defense, because we live in such a world where there are a lot of news stories about such events. And in that congregation, there is a Christian there who is a policeman, and he told me one day after some school shootings in the nation that he came there fully prepared to protect me and everyone else with his weapon. And of course, I wondered what his worldview was according to the Bible. And I said, "Well, if you protect me, in a situation like that. And Paul said something to the effect, to be absent from the body is to be present from the Lord. Aren't you denying me something? If I go through life needing an armed guard or to arm myself, that changes a whole lot of what I should be as a Christian. Now, that's a personal conviction. A lot of people don't hold that conviction. We know that the world religiously does not. So it is a difficult question. George Batty answered this a long time ago in a lesson at Edmond, but I'm not George Batty, so I'm going to have to teach it the way that I can teach it. And as I looked at this, of course, the conclusion was not exactly what this person wanted to hear, but that's fine. I can only teach what I understand the Bible teaches, and if I'm wrong, then I need to be corrected, or I am open to be corrected, and that should be my attitude always. So what we're looking at is this idea where Jesus makes the statement, it is enough. What was Jesus saying was enough? Now, was he referring to the two swords that the apostles presented to him when he told them that now was the time, that the situation was such that they needed to go out and purchase swords, which previously was something they did not do? Is that what he's referring to? And if that's what he's referring to, that they needed to arm themselves, what was the two swords enough for? Was it to defend against the armed mob arresting him very soon in a few hours? Because this, in this context, is when Jesus, from the Passover, presents the Lord's Supper. He institutes the Lord's Supper, and where he notifies the apostles that one of them would betray him with a kiss. And we know that that was Judas, who went out and arranged for an armed mob to come in the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus was praying before his passion, before he went to the cross, in a very private time with the 11 apostles and two very close to him, Peter and John, who slept three times through those intervals of praying. Now, was it enough that they could defend themselves against that armed mob? Or for what purpose was he telling them that they need to go and purchase swords? I think in understanding what a sword is helps us. Understanding the context of what Jesus is saying and why he's saying it. And I believe that understanding that with Jesus' words, as he came and pronounced that he was the Messiah, he was a bringer of truth, that he was going to speak truth, and the warfare that Jesus presented before everyone was spiritual, in that he conquered demons, he conquered sickness and illness with healing. He did those miracles that presented him as the Christ. And so to be consistent and to be in the context, I think, will help us to understand what he's talking about. I want you to keep in mind, as I think most of you will, before I even mention it, that Jesus taught there are two kingdoms. There are man's kingdoms, and that there is God's kingdom, the eternal kingdom. And that he was going to bring in the church. He would be the head of the church. And of course, Peter would be making that good confession that Jesus was the Messiah. And we know that that happened. Later, Peter preached that first gospel sermon in Acts 2. But before Peter preached that sermon, he did something very strange in that taking one of those swords that he was told to go and purchase, he had already had one if he was the one holding it and presenting it. We know that in the garden, Peter did something very strange. In Luke 22:49, when those around him saw what was going to happen, they said to him, "Lord, shall we strike with a sword?" Now they ask a question. Shall we do this? And one of them struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. One went ahead, and before Jesus answered this question, did it. Verse 51, but Jesus answered and said, permit even this. And he touched his ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests and captains of the temple and the elders that had come out to him, have you come out against a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you daily in the temple, you did not try to seize me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. So he tells Peter, and we know from other places, that he tells him to put the sword away, to put it into its place, to stop doing what he was doing. And so Jesus answers by his actions what the question was, should we strike with a sword? Now we know previously, flowing with the context, that Jesus was brought before Pilate, because this is the time of his mission where he is losing popularity. When he first began, he was very popular, and they laid down some palm leaves and put him on a donkey and was presenting him as the king of Israel. And so we know they were looking at things very literally. They were wanting to understand that David's throne would be occupied by Jesus, that the nation of Israel would rebound against the Roman rule of that time, which was very constrictive, and holding the Jews to Roman rule rather than to do those things under the law of Moses that they felt was required, such as stoning, capital punishment. Now the Roman government didn't allow that. So with that consideration and understanding that Jesus answered Pilate about the accusation of him being a king, he said, if my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight. But my kingdom is not from here. Heavenly kingdom, spiritual kingdom. So we know that Jesus taught pacifism. We know that in the Beatitudes, he taught to turn the other cheek when someone was to strike you. Now, he doesn't always mean those, he doesn't mean them literally, first of all. He means them as going the second mile if someone was to do something negative to you. He doesn't mean that you have to walk a second mile, but he's talking about to go further than someone would understand. To fight evil with evil was no more under the law of Moses. To a tooth for a tooth, that was something he said. Now it has changed. You love your enemies. And so we know this idea of pacifism that Jesus taught, of peace, is part of the teaching of the kingdom. So we have this idea of the Roman government and God's kingdom, which was going through a change to become the New Testament church of Jesus as the head after he would die and be resurrected. So we have that background, we have that understanding. But I think to go back here a little bit and to understand this idea about it being enough, since he teaches that his servants will not be fighting, he will not be resisting arrest, he mentions something about a prophecy in verse 37. When he makes the statement to his apostles in verse 36, he who has a money bag, let him take it, likewise a knapsack, who has no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. He's reversing a teaching that he did earlier, and we'll get to that. But verse 37 is a key statement, for I say to you that this which is written must still be accomplished in me. Now there's a prophecy he's mentioning here. And he was numbered with the transgressors, for the things concerning me have an end. Isaiah 53:12. Now that Old Testament prophecy is concerning the fact that Jesus would be treated as a common criminal. And some scholars say the idea of the sword was more symbolic. Now remember, the apostles were not allowed to go around carrying swords like the Roman military was. The gladiators, those who were trained to be human weapons, who carried large swords, who carried weapons of death. And a gladiator was someone you would not want to mess with. Now this mob was somewhat of a mixed group of people, but they had obtained some weapons, and of course, with the backing of the Roman government to allow them to go and arrest Jesus because of the false charges, Rome wanted them to just get rid of their problem that they had with Jesus. They suppressed riots. They did not let Jews go around carrying weapons. So the idea of a sword as a weapon may be misconstrued. I say this because some people will take this text and say, here's the reason why I can carry a sword today. Now, in Texas, that's liberal, you can carry a sword. But mostly they're talking about a pistol, an arm, for self-defense. And it's a legitimate question to protect your home, your family, yourself. How do we do that as Christians? What does the Bible teach? Well, this verse doesn't teach that. This verse is not teaching anything about having your own weapon to go about protecting yourself. How do I know that? Because I'm eliminating what it doesn't say. We know that Jesus said that they would not fight. He would not resist this. There was a prophecy concerning it. And if he was to be treated as a criminal, maybe the swords were used symbolically as carrying them as, look, he's a common criminal because criminals carry swords. What's the argument today? Who carries weapons? Well, we know police do. And we know criminals do. They steal them, they buy them on the black market. And then the gray area mix, religious people do. So it seems like everybody does. But who should? Well, if the government says you can, and we know our government has a constitution that allows that, which has been debated quite a bit, but most people accept that here, especially in this state, that you can carry a weapon to protect yourself. So your government allows it. Now, which government has priority in your life? Which one causes a contradiction to you as a Christian? Now, the Bible is going to say in another place that Jesus did not come to set up peace, but to bring a sword. Now, we know that's, as Jim Reiser taught a while back, it's been probably a few years, but it doesn't seem that long to me, that this sword he was talking about is metaphorical, not literal, because he came and there would be separations of families, not physically, but spiritually, because to put God first, to have your priority to love Christ more than your family, was something that God expects. You can't let your family allow them to make decisions for you spiritually that you need to make yourself. And so to put God first should put things in order spiritually. And so that's what he meant by bringing a sword and not peace. So we can understand that. But in this context, we have this idea that there's something the disciples didn't seem to understand, because Peter's action, he was rebuked for that. To stop. It is enough. Put that sword away. He used that phrase twice. And earlier, when Jesus made this triumphal entry into Jerusalem in Luke 19, he predicted he was going to die. He was sent to die. And he taught his disciples that in Luke 9:22 early on, in verses 43 and 45 of Luke 9. In Luke 18, the closer context, 31 and 34, he told them that, and he knew the Jewish hostility of those in leadership, the religious leaders, would be against him, and so his popularity was now coming down. So there's a flip of what he taught them, because earlier we know there's something contradictory here, or it seems contradictory, and he refers to this in verse 35, when I sent you without money bag, knapsack, and sandals, did you lack anything? He's referring earlier to when he first sent his disciples out. And we know that 70 left him because of his difficult sayings. So Jesus said some things that were somewhat hard to understand, spiritually, not always literal. And when they took it literal, he had to correct them. Now earlier, they were sent out without any provisions. They did not need to provide because they were being accepted. They were popular. They were healing, casting out demons. And so the population would put them up in their houses, feed them, clothe them. And Jesus said, if you go to a place and they don't, you shake off the sand off your sandals and you go on. Now, he's saying there's going to be a change. So now you're going to need provisions because I'm not as popular. They're seeking to kill me. Now, did they understand that? We know that he didn't fully understand it, because at his resurrection at the empty tomb, John and Peter went back and hid in the upper room till the Holy Spirit came. It was Mary who pronounced that Jesus was alive, that she had seen him. And she went back and told everyone. But the disciples who were with Jesus, who heard his teaching, did not fully understand what he meant. Why did they not understand? If they didn't understand his resurrection, which should have been clear, that's what it was going to happen. And the prophecy of Isaiah and other prophecies that Jesus was the Messiah, which Peter said in Matthew 16. Where shall we go? You're the Messiah. And yet, they didn't understand his resurrection. How do we expect them to understand the sword when they're still thinking very literally here? And they're sleeping in the garden while he's praying, when they should have been keeping watch, he told them to. And yet, when it came down to it, one of them takes a sword and commits a violent act. Well, the change was they're going to have provisions because they won't be popular anymore. There's going to be a change. The kingdom's going to come, and people are not going to accept it. And so that time is what he's referring to. And so we can understand by the context what he's ruling out. There would not be an armed conflict. He would not resist arrest. But before his arrest and death, he tells him to sell their clothes, use the money, buy themselves swords. What is he telling them? Earlier, they didn't require such, but now things are changing. The fulfillment of Isaiah 53:12 is very close. And when they said, look, here are two swords, he said, it is enough. What does he mean, it is enough? That's enough for an armed conflict. That's good that you got two swords. Now, those are little swords because the Roman government won't allow us to have actual gladiator swords. Those are fishermen's knives, but they'll do. Is that what he's saying? It's good that we have two for 12. 11, actually, because one of you is gone. Is that what he means by it is enough? Is that sufficient? Or does he mean something else? He has been discussing this. Have you ever talked to a child, your child, and said, that's enough? Does he mean something along that line? End of discussion. No more discussion. Time to move on, because he didn't say any more after this. Whatever he said or meant by it is enough, that's all he said and moved on to the garden. It's enough of this discussion about that. They're not understanding it. Discussion over. They'll get it later. But the change was then when I sent you out, now by two swords. What is he telling them? When he said in Matthew 26:52 to Peter, for all those who take up the sword shall perish by the sword. That's a rebuke. He told them to put it away. But earlier he told them to go and buy it. Is that what he meant? That to buy the weapon? Or did he mean as a sword then, compared to today? The idea of when we read this or someone reads this and sees the sword, what do they think? Modern day English sword. Well, he also told them about a purse. Who carries a purse today? Not very many men, unless it's a fashion statement, then it's a different category. But as I tease Brother Glenn Osborne, he likes to carry a bag, and I say, what are you doing carrying your purse? The disciples were told not to. It's a joke, but he says, well, it's not a purse, Larry. It's a bag. It's a travel bag, which is right. A purse is a travel bag in the Old Testament. We don't generally see a brother with a bag and say he's got a purse. We don't think that way. But a sword, what was a sword? A sword could be a military weapon, or it could be a fisherman's knife, which was limited to 12 to 14, maybe 18 inches, somewhat like a machete. They'd use it to cut wood, cut leather, a cutting implement, cutting fish, nets that got tangled. It was a tool. Was he telling them to buy tools? Because the future they're going to need to provide for themselves. Or was he telling them to buy weapons like the Romans have, except yours are going to be smaller and you're only going to have two? Is that what he meant by it is enough? Well, Strong's doesn't really give a definition for this noun sword in the New Testament. But there are others, Adam Clark and others, who say it's evident, verse 38, he never intended any resistance to his capture, nor to allow such a weapon like a sword to be used on such an occasion. Now, in Luke 22:38, Strong's Concordance acknowledges the Greek word machaira, defined as a knife, a dirk, or a sword. It could be whatever. I think the context has to limit it. We can't go beyond the context. If we read into the context, we're going to have a problem. So he tells them to buy two of something, either weapons or tools or implements, knives or swords. And when they say we have two, it is enough. Now we know it's not enough for a military fight, and that was never going to be anyway. We know that he told Peter, if I needed help, if I needed armed resistance, I could call down 12 legions of angels. It wouldn't be a conflict. There wouldn't be bloodshed on the part of the disciples. You wouldn't get hurt. And he told them about watching over them and taking care of them. He prayed for them in the garden. So it wasn't about a conflict physically, carnal warfare. And we know that Paul told us that. Put on the whole armor of God. Is there any inconsistency in Jesus' teaching? I say there isn't. So they had two of something, knives, swords, and Jesus said that's enough. So we know probably what it's not. What it is, I can't say exactly other than I believe it's probably a tool. He's telling them to be aware that they're going to have to provide for themselves, not to arm themselves. Maybe, there are scholars who say maybe they use them against robbers to just slash them and show them, hey, we have weapons, there's 11 of us. They probably didn't travel together always, but they had to share those two. When they did travel, maybe they just flashed them and the robber would run away. I don't know. Some scholars say that that's maybe why they could use that, but it obviously wasn't big enough to match a Roman soldier. So what is he telling them? Well, I think I know what he's not telling them. He's not telling them to buy a weapon. And so if someone uses this verse today, it goes against everything else Jesus taught up until this point. So I don't think it's a very good verse to use to say, Jesus allows me to be armed today with a weapon. Maybe as a Christian you'll find other places in the Bible for that. I don't know. I don't look for that. But that's just me. Should you take care of your home, your body, your family? Yes, you should do what you can. You should be prepared. There are other ways to be prepared. The Bible does tell us that man was made in the image of God. And we are responsible how we treat others, even though they have disregard ourselves, even though they may be doing something criminal against us, even to take our life. But Jesus gives us the rationale. No more of this, he tells them, concerning the violent resistance of Peter, John 18:10. Luke 22:51, put away your sword, Matthew 26:52. Are we allowed to take it up now, when he told them to put it away? And for all who will take the sword will die by the sword. So I know what he's not saying. And I know many times, as the great teacher, he would teach things in a spiritual way, that if you take it literal, you're going to contradict what he meant and what he said. Such as, if your right eye causes you to stumble, remove it, gouge it out. If your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off, Matthew 25:30. Was that literal? Well, no. He was telling them to take every measure possible to avoid sin. He talked about the faith of the mustard seed, Matthew 17:20, Luke 17:6. He said that they could move mountains. Now, is he saying that literal? Well, no, he's talking about the things that they thought were impossible. With faith, God would make those things possible. There would be a way to do things that seemed unimaginable. If someone slaps your right cheek, turn to them the other cheek. Luke 6:29, Matthew 5:39. Do you literally turn your cheek if someone were to slap you? Or did he mean when you should not retaliate when you're provoked? Overcome evil with good, Romans 12:21. Well, we could go on and on and on. But I think the fact is, the disciples misunderstood something Jesus taught, and he corrected them on that. I think the same could be for us today as Christians. We need to be careful about how we take a text and make a pretext out of it without considering the context. Now, after I taught this lesson, the person said, and I knew it wasn't what they wanted to hear. I understood that. That's fine. Jesus caused a lot of people to go away, and if I teach what he teaches, that can happen. But he wants faithfulness. He doesn't want great numbers. Great numbers don't prove anything. Few will be saved. That's what Jesus said. He wants faithful. We read Revelation. We know that under that government, they were suppressed. None of the apostles, as far as history and those in the Bible who were martyred, ever fought for their lives, but they fought with the gospel. They fought peacefully. They fought a spiritual warfare. They never fought a carnal warfare. So obviously they got the understanding. As I said, this person didn't like what I said, and so their remark was after the lesson, very intriguing things he said, but do you realize that by saying that about the sword, all the people that misunderstood that verse up until this time, they'll be condemned. They'll go to hell. Well, that wasn't what I was teaching. I was trying to teach what the context teaches and what it doesn't teach. But really, is that true? Because a lot of people misunderstand words in the New Testament. That they base their whole lives on such a thing as one word, so that it causes them to be condemned. They live their whole life around that one thing. It's quite a stretch. I think it was because they didn't agree. And so that was the thing that came to their mind. That's a human thing. To put up a defense, to not like sometimes what others teach, even though that's what the Bible teaches. But as Christians, we want to be careful. What does Jesus teach? Is he consistent? Does he teach truth? Sometimes we don't want to hear that. And when we do have to find our way through difficulties in life, well then let's find out what Jesus said concerning the truth and not make up our own. Have you believed the gospel? Have you heard it? Have you considered repenting of your sins, confessing Christ, being baptized for the remission of sins to be a Christian? If you haven't, we're giving you this opportunity this morning. Please consider that thoughtfully. If, as a Christian, you need the prayers of others, for some reason we'd like to pray with you. Won't you come while we stand and sing?